You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 137.
Hello, welcome back to my podcast. That was a clip from a piece called Autumn Day, thought that was appropriate, by Kevin MacLeod. And I think I've talked about my PodSafe music in the past. Some of the sources I used to use have disappeared, and I found a nice new source. It's actually the YouTube Music Library, and many of the songs you can download and use, of course, in YouTube videos or in other productions that you might do. So enjoy the full song at the end of my podcast, Autumn Day by Kevin MacLeod. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. My main topic today is something I haven't covered, and that has to do with identity management and remote proctoring. I'm interviewing Don Kastner, who's the CEO and president of ProctorU Incorporated. So we answer the questions, why do universities need identity management, authentication, and remote proctoring? How does ProctorU work? What is UCard? What kinds of biometrics do they use? Hint, it uses a keystroke identification. How reliable are biometrics? And for example, can clients use ProctorU for large-scale simultaneous use in a testing center? That's one application we might be interested in here. So without further ado, here's my interview with Don Kastner. Don, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me today. I'm glad I was able to grab you before we take off on our Thanksgiving break. How are you doing out there?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to Thanksgiving, actually. So it's always a great time to get together with family and have turkey and those kinds of things.
I'm very interested in your company and your products. And I know for those in my audience who are not that familiar, why don't you just tell me a little bit about yourself and how the company got started?
Sure. In the mid-2000s, I was the president of a wholly online university named Andrew Jackson University down in Birmingham, Alabama. In about 2007, our students were having a big problem. They loved the online format, but they needed a place to take their exams. So the model that we had was they had to go to a test center. And for them, that was very inconvenient. So they asked us to find a solution. So being the entrepreneurs that we were, we threw together some technology and came up with a way to proctor people from home. The project went so well that we decided to actually roll that out into its own company. And ProctorU came of age in 2009. Since that time, we have proctored almost 2 million exams for almost 700 different colleges and universities throughout the country. So we have a basic product called ProctorU, which is our proctoring tool that allows you to take exams from home. And then in the last couple of years, we've been working on an authentication-only tool called UCard, which allows us to authenticate a student's identity at the beginning of a course and then allows the institution to use that digital identification in any way they choose.
For those who don't know, why do universities need to have identity management authentication?
Well, I mean, there's a couple reasons. The first reason, which is the most obvious, is it's federal law. So if you're an institution that takes Title IV funding, for any online student, you have to verify their identity. You have to prove that the student who's registered in the course is a student who's actually doing the work. And so that's been in place since 2008. The Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008 mandated that. That law is going to be expanded in the next round of legislation that should come out in the next year or two. So on the one hand, it's a requirement, but on the other hand, it's just good practice. You know, if you think about colleges and universities for years, you know, if you were teaching in the classroom, and I used to be an economics professor, you pretty much got to know all your students. They're the ones that showed up pretty much for class most of the time, and you got to know them pretty well. So when somebody showed up for a test, you'd seen them before. But in the online world and the complete flexibility that we have, it's sort of an anonymous experience, and you don't know who is showing up on the other end. And with technology comes lots of opportunities for students to use other avenues. There's lots of websites out there that are called things like takemycourse.com, where you can go out and pay someone to take your course. So not only is it legislated, it's also just from a programmatic standpoint, it assures that you have that integrity.
Right. Yeah. To sort of outline how this works, my understanding is that whether you're using UCard or the full Proctor U experience, it starts with a registration. How does that work?
So it's really simple. The way that we designed this really was based on our experience. So if you have to get an identification, generally you have to go somewhere, you have to present yourself, you have to present your credentials. It's the same way online. You go to your computer, you present yourself via webcam to Proctor U on our site. You show us your credentials and our identification. We may walk you through a public record search, but essentially we authenticate that you are the right person. And then we create your digital identification, and we can use any biometric program, but what we've chosen right now is to use a keystroke profile. And so you essentially type out about 160 different characters. And what that does is that creates a profile that is unique to you, sort of like your signature. And so we can then, because we have verified that you're the one that created the profile, we're able to deliver that profile at any point during course to make sure that you are the one that's actually logged in and present at that time.
Right. In fact, that's one of the things that I think attracted us to Proctor U, that it seemed like a pretty interesting way to do biometrics, because you're not taking a fingerprint or a retina scan, things that, in the future might be really impinge on privacy and something that you could be an issue. In fact, how are privacy concerns handled by Proctor U? Has that been an issue with some of your clients?
I mean, privacy is a big deal in education, with FERPA. And if you take a look at a lot of the other legislation, student privacy is paramount to what the federal government is trying to look at. But, so when we looked at different tools, we're looking at tools that really protect that privacy. So, a keystroke biometric is very benign, and that it's not really being used anywhere else, and it's not something that somebody could replicate. So nobody's going to be able to steal that and use that to access your records. Unlike your username and password, which can be hacked, the keystroke profile is very difficult to hack. And so it protects the student's identity, and because it's not used in a lot of other places, it's unlikely that it's going to get out somehow.
Right. Somebody's going to try to hack that, they would have to have access to your algorithms, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. They have to go into the program, get the actual algorithm, and somehow inject that algorithm at the exact time. And so pretty complex to do that.
Now, a lot of our students are foreign students, and some of the more traditional bank type questions, which address is familiar to you and that sort of thing, might not work with them. Does that make you take a different tack in helping to authenticate foreign students?
Yeah, so what with U.S. students, generally we'll do two steps for the initial authentication. We'll go ahead and check their photo ID, and then we'll run them through that sort of banking question type program. Internationally, what we do is actually run them through an ID scan. So we'll actually scan the identification, run it into a database, and then we'll actually check the format of the ID so that we know it's a valid ID in the way that it's been put together. And then it will check public records for a name and address to see if those things generally match. So we use a third-party company to do that, and that gives us good assurance that ID is a valid ID.
Interesting.
And then on top of that, we're going to take a photo of the person as well. So we've got a permanent record of the ID, the photo, and then we've got the keystroke record to compare with that. So it gives us really multiple factors to be able to assure that it is the right person, even though they're located in a foreign country.
Now, with the keystroke biometric, how reliable is it? Does it depend on the keyboard the person's using? And I assume there's a limitation with regard to using a mobile device.
Yeah, right now it's not set up for a mobile device, so it does require a keyboard. And generally speaking, you've hit the nail on the head a little bit. So if someone generates their keystroke profile and they were to say switch keyboards, that first time they go in, it's going to be slightly off. But one of the things that we noticed is it sort of grades it on a scale from 0 to 100%. And if you're the one that created the profile and then you go do it at a keyboard that you're not comfortable with, you'll get a low score, maybe 60 or 70% that it's you. But if someone else tries to do it, you'll see a score in the 0 to 5% range. So what we're able to do is, even if the score is low, we're actually able to compare it and really identify that a true negative score is really in that 0 to 10% range, where we know it's somebody else trying to replicate you. In addition to that, we rely on that backup technology, which is that photo. So in the case where you got a low score because of some instance like that, we would immediately go check the photo to see if the photo matches. And if you match on the photo basis, then we know it's you and you still pass the process.
Now, when you say you check the photo, that's a manual process. Have you looked into facial recognition, or does that present its own problems?
No, we have looked at facial recognition, and we think it's pretty close to being used in this case. So we see the sort of next generation of the product running both of those comparisons, starting out with the keystroke analytic, and then if that fails, backing it up with a photo comparison. From a photo recognition standpoint, the good news is all we're doing is comparing two photos and making sure that it's the same person, which is completely different from taking a photo and trying to compare it against a broad database to determine who that person is, naming their identity. So we think that's pretty close, and it will be in the next generation.
Interesting. That reminds me of when I first started using Picasa, the Google software to manage photos, and the fact that it had facial recognition and can group all your photos according to the picture amazed me, especially when a photo popped up, they would just show the headshot, and I said, I don't remember that photo. And when I looked at the full picture, it was scanning, it was a photograph on a picture that was sitting on the top of a piano in this much larger picture, and it actually was able to make the identification. So I'm sure that the technology is out there.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, what we've run is it's running in about the 70% range from the data analytics we've seen on that in terms of 70% accurate. In other words, about 30% of the time, it's going to give you a false reading. And that's for the traditional mainline photo recognition program. Some of the other ones like Intel are much higher level above that, but the cost metrics have to come down a little bit to meet where we need to be, where keystrokes are in the 90% range. So that's why we chose that as our first level.
So I understand now how, and I think maybe my audience understands how you would do an identity check and authentication. Now, when it comes down to doing the full proctoring, because if a student sits down, takes a test, and they go through the identity authentication, then, while the test is going on, somebody else could sit in their place how do you manage the actual remote proctoring?
So, I mean, it's the same general concept, which is to really replicate what we do in the classroom. So in the classroom, I've got a group of students, they come in, they sit down, they go over the rules, and I watch them take the test. We do that same thing online. So the student pops up on the webcam, we're able to see them, we connect up to their computer so we can administer the test and make sure they're not doing anything on their computer they shouldn't be doing, and then we monitor them the entire examination. And if they do something during that examination that's odd, we'll just butt in a little bit and ask them if we can help them and try to figure out what it is. So our goal is to be able to intervene in that exam and make sure that we don't have to invalidate it, make sure that they're following the rules and remind them, for example, keep your eyes on your own paper. Back in the day when we used to take those Scantrons and the guy next to you would go up and sharpen his pencil, we all had that kind of inclination to look over and that you should say, hey, keep your eyes on your own paper. So it's the same concept.
It sounds like it's pretty labor intensive then on your part. Is there any automation involved, or do you have, one of your staff looking at simultaneously, X number of students?
Yeah, great point. I mean, it's really a combination between technology and the human element. If you take a look at our product 7 years ago and our product today, we're starting to use more and more automation tools to assist our proctors. So, audio flags or video flags. We're working with what's called gaze tracking software right now, which if someone looks off camera for too long, it'll alert the proctor that something going on. But you still need that human element to be able to make the judgment as to whether or not somebody's merely just scratching their leg and that's why they're off camera, or, there's a legitimate reason. And so it's really blending those two things together. But the human element is still a very critical component, because you've got to have that judgment, and then you need that intervention to be able to make sure that exam can keep going. Because at the end of the day, you want that student to get through that exam and have followed all the rules so that it's a fair assessment. You don't want to be in a situation where you're having to go back to 3% or 5% of your students and have a discussion as to why they broke the rules and what are you going to do. We'd rather stop it in its tracks and move on than come back and catch them and have to try to legislate what's going to happen.
Now, in terms of how your clients use ProctorU, probably the largest percentage are totally online type exams. Are there any clients that actually use it, say, in a large testing center where they don't trust the, having one faculty member walk around this room with a couple hundred students? Are there any institutions that use your product in that kind of scenario?
More along the lines of being an option. So we have an institute, University of Arkansas, for example, is one that we work with. And so they'll issue a large exam and they'll open up their test center and allow students to go to the test center, but they'll actually hook up with us while they're in the test center. So they're providing the student with the equipment to be able to take the examination, but they still rely on us to do the proctoring so that it's the same for every student. So we're seeing some of that. We haven't yet had a customer come to us and say, look, I don't trust my test center. Can you guys go ahead and hook up the students in the test center? Usually it's to supplement their existing program.
What made you decide on Keystroke Biometrics? Weren't there other biometric technologies that you could have used?
Yeah, so we looked at three different ones. So we looked, first of all, the most important thing was to make sure that no additional equipment was required. So, when you talk about fingerprint, we talk about iris scanners, things like that, those require additional equipment. So we wanted to avoid that. So we eliminated any solution that required somebody to buy something else. So we really narrowed down to three, and that was facial recognition, because you just use a camera. We had keystroke analytics, and then there's a third one called gesture tracking, where somebody can create a symbol with a mouse or create a symbol with their finger on the computer for the screens that allow that. So we looked at all three of those, and we chose keystroke because it was the most reliable. I talked about the sort of false negatives, the times at which somebody who's the right person who's doing it, but it gives you a negative score. It was really critical for us that percentage was less than 10, that it was in that sort of 5% or less figure. Because even though we've designed it with the backup, which was the photo, that first level still has to work at a very high level. And the other two, the facial recognition wasn't there yet in terms of the cost structure. We think it will get there. And the gesture, which is really cool, and I love the concept, but we weren't getting the same numbers on that.
Yes. In fact, I think we looked at another competitor that used the sort of the gesture. And it seemed very kludgy. It just didn't work as well as we had expected, and they had backup mechanisms, and it just seemed kind of complicated. How long do you think it'll be before, because, there's so much going on in the mobile area, and when you're talking about mobile students, how soon do you think it'll be before you have a product that'll be reliable on a mobile device like an iPad?
Yeah, we think the mobile is going to be the facial recognition that works on the mobile. So once the facial recognition software gets to the point and the cost level where we can implement it, then we can implement a solution for mobile devices. And the idea for us would be that we can capture it the same way. So with UCard, if you go through that registration process and you do your keystroke and you take your photo, once we're able to get that photo recognition onto a mobile device, we can use the same registration to validate it. So that's really the product plan. Is that going to be next year, the year after? Probably within that time frame. Just things are moving really quickly with this type of technology, especially with Intel and what they're trying to do with their password photo recognition product. So we're pretty bullish that that'll happen in the next couple of years.
Are you seeing other clients other than outside of education using you?
We've talked to a few. I mean, we've got in the proctoring side, we've got sort of certification and professional testing. They're definitely interested in the proctoring product. They're still... most of those tests are sort of one-off kind of exams that you might take once every 3 to 5 years, depending on your certification. So sort of an ongoing authentication tool like UCard doesn't really fit there, but the proctoring fits very well. There's potential for the authentication piece in healthcare. That's another big area that we've been hearing about and talked to a few companies. But you know, we know education very well, and that's really what we're trying to keep our focus on. You know, it's too easy to get distracted by the shiny pennies that are out there. And our idea is to stay focused on our industry and the industry we know well, because it keeps our focus and it keeps our edge.
Great. Well, Don, I think this has been a good summary and overview of your products and the fact that, you know, this is becoming required by Department of Education. It seems like you've got a good business plan. So anyway, thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope that was useful to you. I certainly learned a lot about how this technology works. I do have links on my show notes, of course, to ProctorU and some other interesting resources that I found. One of the resources I found was an article that's called Utilizing Webcam-Based Proctoring to Deter Misconduct in Online Exams. So even if the technology doesn't work perfectly, it certainly tends to deter students from cheating. And there's also an article, a link to an article, Federal Aid Recipients Illegally Receive Millions in Federal Student Aid. So be forewarned. So stay tuned now for Autumn Day by Kevin McLeod. And until next time, have a great week.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.